Welcome back. We're in front of a live audience in the BGE Energy Theatre here in Dublin. We have an audience with Martin O'Neill and Roy Keane. Good evening, everybody. Clearly already two of the most popular guests that we've ever had on The Last Word. And so much to talk about this evening, so much to look forward to in the European qualifiers, some great games for the Irish team. We're here today in association with Club Ireland and the FAI and also with Three, who are sponsors to the Irish team, as well as been sponsors to The Last Word. But I want to start talking to our two guests about the World Cup that we've just enjoyed, that everyone seems to have enjoyed so much. Just how enjoyable was it for you, Martin?
Well, I thought it was excellent, despite the fact that I don't think that there was a real outstanding side in the competition. That said, of course, we've got Germany in the European nations, so I really shouldn't be saying anything against them. What I meant is that they were probably the best side in the competition eventually. Whether they deserve to win the final or not is debatable. I thought Argentina missed a couple of chances, but in general, I was pleasantly surprised at the World Cup itself. I probably was expecting a lot of tired teams, particularly European sides, maybe to go out there and not really show up. And with one or two exceptions, I have to say the European sides didn't do too badly. But overall, it's a really good competition. And even though I suppose the last, maybe the quarter-final, semi-final and final might not have been fantastic games, you know, then I think the competition had already made its mark. So everybody has gone away thinking it's a really good competition, and in essence it probably was.
Roy, how much did you enjoy it?
Yeah, no, I thought it was good. Like it's just been said, a lot of attacking play, a lot of the teams that I think a positive mindset. I think that maybe was the fact it was in Brazil. I think they plugged into the I suppose the culture and the way the Brazilians think, and I enjoyed the games, and I think the best team won it.
Were you sorry you didn't go out there in the end?
No. I'd made my mind up maybe 1 or 2 weeks before that, and obviously there was maybe something going on with Villa, and I just thought I didn't want to be over there, and if my mindset wasn't right, and as we all know, it's not the first World Cup I've missed out on. But that had nothing to do with the facilities, obviously.
Was it the possibility you've been stuck with Martin O'Neill for an extra 4 weeks as well? Perhaps anything to do with it?
No, to be fair, no. We had the tour, obviously, with the Irish team as well towards the end of the season. And in the back of my mind, I was thinking if something happened with Villa, I wanted 2 or 3 weeks with my family as well to relax and try and get the deal done, because, of course, I had to speak to the FAI, and I knew that wouldn't be easy. So I just wanted to make sure things were in place. And I was quite happy to watch the games at home on the television.
Okay, well, I'll come back to Villa in a little while. How many of the matches, Martin, did you actually get to be at rather than been in the television studio?
Well, really was based in Rio for most of the time. It was,
tough.
It was really, really tough. We stayed in Ipanema Beach and we did the things from Copacabana Beach, so it was desperately tough. You know, that 15-minute drive from the hotel up to the studios was just, you know, it was... gosh, I'm so tiring. And then someone in ITV had this great notion that we should do some of the games from the beach side. And we had occasionally to wear some shorts. So I'm not so saying that that was a fantastic sight. Either myself or Adrian Childs in particular. You may not know him because you may have been watching Eamon Donfey swear on your own channels, but we had a presenter, Adrian Childs, who has big fat legs, and he was eventually told by the ITV controllers to put a pair of trousers on, you know, because he was scaring off the audiences. Yeah. So he did, but he's a fine lad. He's okay, perfectly all right. But the competition itself, as we mentioned, I got to the Maracanã to watch a few games, as well too. And
what was that like? What was the atmosphere like?
Atmosphere was fantastic. Really, really fantastic. It was something that I wanted to do. A couple of things. I'd never been to Brazil before, so I went up to the Christ the Redeemer, and I saw Roy's head on top of it, you know. I prayed to him for a little while. He sent down his forgiveness, which is very, very, very pleasing. And I told him that Saipan had been forgiven, and we could start afresh. So I've done that, and I went to the Maracanã, which are the two things I'd like. And I also, believe it or not, met a couple of Irish journalists. And the day after the World Cup, we went to a favela. And we were guided around that by a young fellow from Cork. Some of you may have heard about it. He was doing some radio programs anyway. He was he knew the main fellow in the favela. And we were able to walk through.
And what was that like? I mean, what different side of Brazil did you get?
Well, I think that was a really genuine view of Brazilian life to me. I'm not so sure that the Copacabana beach is exactly, while it's terrific, it's exactly synonymous with everything that's happening in Brazil. So these favelas basically dug into the hillside, and poverty abounds. So it is. It was really mind-boggling to see it. But the people are very friendly, and the favela that we went to, we were told that by comparison to other ones, it was Manhattan. So, in other words, it was pretty friendly. It was perfectly all right. But that was a part of Brazilian life that I was delighted to have seen. And even though I spent only the one morning doing that, it was an eye-opener.
A little bit more about the game. Which games did you actually get to see when you were in the Maracanã?
Got to see two games. The two games live was they were Russia versus Belgium, and the other game was not a brilliant match. It was between France and Ecuador. The first time I went, I got a special invitation by ITV into the VIP, which was terrific, you know, really great. And then the next time, Gordon Strachan and I went to the other game. We were sat round the other side, and it wasn't VIP. So we were surrounded by, well, Gordon was surrounded by a group of Scots boys who were who had had a few drinks, and they were letting him know what team he should be picking against us. I was delighted to get that information. And I stored it. But the very fact that the Scottish included two of our lads in their team might tell you that it was a bit of a problem. So those are the games we saw, and they were as a great experience.
I'll just stay with you for a minute, though, Martin. Do you prefer to see the matches, be in the stadium, to see the full pitch, the full everything that's going on, rather than the more limited view that you actually see in a television screen?
Well, absolutely, of course. I mean, you do not, you get exactly what you're saying, get a limited view. You don't see the whole picture, you don't see necessarily the formations of the teams and things like that, and while you can gauge something from it, to actually be there live to see, you know, can take in the whole picture is precisely what you want to be doing.
And for you, Roy, when you were doing the punditry work on ITV, how much more did you enjoy actually being at the games to see it live and then give your comments on television rather than being in a studio?
No, I found it a lot easier because we'd done the Euros a couple of years ago from a studio, and I found that difficult trying to gauge a game when you're just watching the television like everybody else. So I certainly enjoyed going to the matches, even though it's a lot more hassle getting to games with the travelling. But when you're watching a game live, you do get a feel for it, the pace of the game. Obviously, you can look at the tactics and the systems a little bit more closely. So I found that more enjoyable. That was the benefit for me, I think, doing a lot of games for ITV over the last few years, actually getting to see a lot of good games live and getting to see a lot of the top players. And also, like when you're a player, obviously, and you're playing these big games, you're literally stuck in a hotel. So I kind of enjoyed the benefits of getting over there the night before and relaxing and doing a little bit of sightseeing and trying to enjoy the atmosphere, particularly, you know, the nicer cities.
Is that something you don't get as a player, is it?
No, when you're a player, obviously you're particularly you're in the zone, shall we say, and you travel somewhere, you're with the team, and it can be difficult, particularly when I was more so when you were at United and you went abroad. You know, you really couldn't leave the hotel. So when you travel, and it's, again, with the international match, you literally sometimes just fly over the morning, the day before the game. So you're preparing for the game. You're obviously stuck in the hotel, and you're resting up. So I enjoy that side of it. Just kind of, it's a lot more relaxing, but of course, there's still that element of frustration when you go and watch the bigger matches, or you go to Barcelona or Munich, and you just sometimes I still kind of had them thoughts in my mindset going to the matches that I wish I was still playing. You know, I'd speak to one or two of the other lads, whether it be Andy Townsend or Gareth Southgate, and they were quite relaxing. No, I'm not so bad watching it, where I'd be going, I'd love a game, you know. And that can be frustrating, because generally speaking, I don't look back at my career and wish I was still playing, but there'd be certain games I'd get to and I'd be thinking, you know, this is what it's all about, the big Champions League night.
And being a manager or an assistant manager, you get the same buzz in preparing for a game?
No, not really. No, I think nothing's ever going to be the same. Anybody will tell you that who's played sport at a decent level. You know, it is all about playing. The next best thing, I suppose, obviously, is management or coaching and working with the players. And you have to change your whole mindset, because, again, I suppose one of the frustrations I found a little bit with doing the TV, sometimes we'd be pitch side and you get a real feel for the game, and we'd end up sometimes watching the game from the side of the pitch, and the lads I'd be with ITV, would it be Adrian that was mentioned earlier, he'd be saying, this is great, isn't it? You know, side of the pitch watching the match, and how exciting. I'd be looking at him going, you know, relax a little bit, you know. To me, it was all about playing, so I couldn't get that excitement that he was getting. But still, coaching and management does at least get you feel you're in the dressing room, and of course I missed that as well with the TV, you know, and coming back working with Martin and the Irish team, and now with Villa, it's fantastic, because you really can't beat it. But even the emotional side of it, the TV, you do it and it might be a decent game, and afterwards you just there's no buzz to it really in that side of it.
But I really hope you're not finished with the TV punditry. You're not finished with it, are you?
No, well, hopefully the longer I'm out of it, the better, because that means I'm still coaching. You know, I wouldn't rule out going back to it. And it's been great. And I don't know, ITV, I just enjoyed working with ITV and the lads there. And as I said, even the travelling. And people always say it's, when you're out of football, it's a good way of kind of networking and all that, carry on. But I didn't see it that way. I just thought I'd do it for one or two games, get out of the house, and before I knew it, I'd done two or three seasons with ITV, and they were very good to me, I have to say. And the fact is, we're getting to the live. I know there's other companies out there, but I enjoy the fact going to the games and watching players live.
Could you ever see yourself coming back and working for Irish television?
Well, I don't know. I don't know. It depends what the money is, I suppose.
I believe Eamon Dunphy got a lot of money for being on television over the years. They might be able to afford you.
I heard so, yeah.
The people that you were on the panel with, were they often taken aback by how forthright you were willing to be? For example, one of the famous ones just before the World Cup, when Steven Gerrard was sitting beside you and you were quite dismissive of England's chances and you didn't spare him his embarrassment.
No, yeah, but I didn't. I certainly wouldn't go on a... I certainly didn't want to embarrass him or try to embarrass anybody, no matter who I'm working with. But I think Adrian asked me the question about England, and I thought they'd struggle, and I was right. It wasn't anything against Steven Gerrard, or I think, you know, if someone's going to ask you a question, then you got to try and answer him. But I didn't think they'd do as badly as they did. And again, that wasn't against Steven Gerrard, and I certainly wasn't looking to embarrass him.
Oh, no, I'm not suggesting that in the least, but you were just telling it as you saw it rather than giving a powder puff answer.
Yeah, but what else are you supposed to do, you know?
There are other pundits who would have ducked it.
Yeah, but the few times where I've tried to kind of maybe analyse something or maybe try to be clever with my answers, I always come up short. I do like... People say I get straight to the point, but I find that I'm more comfortable doing it that way. If I try and be too clever with something, I end up, you know, I think it causes me more trouble than actually just saying the way I think it is. Even though that could be wrong, obviously.
Martin, why were England so crap at the World Cup?
Because Roy said they were going to.
could they have done much better with the players available to them?
You would have thought so. I think sometimes you can analyse a game till you're blue in the face, and you can invent it, reinvent it, and you can do all of these things. Eventually it comes up to some simple thing of actually having a couple of chances and taking them, and having a couple of chances at the other end and actually missing them. And that's very, very simple, and it's not what people want to hear these days. They want highfalutin answers for it, in particular if you're in the hotel with a Dutch team, which I was, and they find out that, you know, Van Gaal had, he had basically reinvented the game. He was playing three at the back, which I did at Leicester City 25 years ago. I first started with the three at the back at Leicester was because two of them were crap, and I thought I'll fill the other boy in and he might help them out, you know, because it turns out it was. And it became a great plan, you know. And also in 1996, we played in the playoff final against Crystal Palace. This is Leicester, my first time. Oh, by the way, I want to tell you that eventually my centre halves that I got, a couple of them were the best in the business, you know, but I'm not talking about them first of all, so just in case they would happen to be listening or finding out and saying, well, I thought you told me I was actually quite good. You were. It was the ones before that that were rubbish. But anyway, in 1996 we got to the playoff final against Crystal Palace,
and you got to a penalty shootout, didn't you?
Got to a penalty shootout, and I had two goalkeepers at that time. I had a goalkeeper, young lad called Kevin Poole, who was very athletic, very agile. He was 5'10". And I had another goalkeeper called Zelko Kalaj that I inherited at Leicester City, who was 6'7" and rubbish. And eventually actually ended up playing for Australia and a couple of other decent clubs as well, to think AC Milan, although he was a sub for them for quite a number of years. But anyway, at that time he wasn't very good. But I had made I thought to myself, if we get to the penalty shootout, that I would actually change the goalkeeper over, and which I did in the very, very last minute. So unsure was I of Big Zelko Kalaj actually catching the ball that I thought I'll wait to the last possible moment, which I did. This was an extra time, so I kept the substitute back, made the substitution, made the change, and I remember Zelko going on. He was so confident, he was so full of self-confidence, which he had half the ability that his self-confidence would suggest to him. But anyway, and he said, don't you worry, Gaffer, he said, I'll win this for you. And I thought, well, you know, and this was him pulling on his gloves at the time. Thankfully, we scored in that minute to win the game. So Zelko didn't actually touch the ball in the back, but immediately claimed that substitution won the game for us, if we were so lucky. But the point I'm trying to make is this here, that I thought that maybe just for the penalty kicks, such a big, big lad actually might... I might put off the opposition who had been used for the last 120 minutes to a smaller goalkeeper. That was all. But it wasn't...
Van Gaal was a genius for thinking it up in the World Cup.
And then it kind of backfired in the next round because the penalty shootout arrived. And I believe at that stage that the goalkeeper, Selesen, might have been put under a little bit of pressure because Kroll had done so well in the previous match. Anyway, that's beside the point. What I'm talking about is really, it's the reinvention of the game. Of course, it doesn't mean that people cannot be great players, great coaches, of course. And within that game, you can actually do certain things that, you know, that can be innovative. Absolutely right. But the game essentially has not changed in so many years.